Another death at dinner. Beatrice Baxter found herself in an unusually poor frame of mind this cold January morning. It wasn't as if she couldn't deal with irritation. She had the world's most aggravating boss, and she'd put up with him for 19 years. She simply hated anything which disturbed her routine. Beatrice, an excellent executive secretary with an obsessive attention to organization and detail, unfortunately carried these characteristics over to her private life as well, if one could call it a life, since she did little at home besides clean her house, reorganize her drawers, and read romance novels after the maid had gone home. Although she wouldn't have admitted it, she was also annoyed that her employer had chosen to show up on the 10th of January, rather than the 3rd, as she had done, and the office was rather dull and lonely without him. Despite the fact that he was extremely rude and ill-tempered, she had no problems correcting him, was not at all intimidated by any attempts to bully or fire her, and enjoyed the occasional friendly banter they engaged in. There were times when she almost felt they were kindred spirits. Neither could tolerate a client who did not show up 10 minutes early with every piece of his paperwork arranged to the most minute detail, and they both hated displays of emotion, other than anger. There was nothing worse, he had told her during their interview, than a secretary who was always bawling about something, and Beatrice had never shed a tear in her life. He did have a few weak spots, Beatrice thought, as she arranged the items on her desk for the third time. That dreadful Rosie child had always been allowed to enter without an appointment, with whatever selfish and demanding request crossed her mind. And occasionally that Solange person, Beatrice shuddered at the thought, would also appear now and then without warning. And after she'd left, her employer was simply unbearable for the remainder of the day. The morning of the 10th, therefore, found Beatrice primly ensconced behind her desk, in a beige linen suit and white blouse, black cat-eyed glasses perched on her nose, preparing the lecture she would impart to her employer about his tardiness. Then she knew a great deal of shouting would occur, and he would storm into his office and slam the door behind him. The fact that Quinn was so predictable was another reason Beatrice liked him. When she glanced up and found him smiling cheerfully over her desk with tie in hand, she was at first startled and then horrified.
"B, how are your holidays?"
he said pleasantly, and Beatrice sniffed and peered at him suspiciously.
"Just fine, thank you," she scowled. "Have you been drinking?"
The consumption of alcohol was right up there with laziness, tardiness, and an absence of alphabetized filing folders in Beatrice's estimation. Quinton just laughed at this.
"No. Is that odd for me to be in a good mood?"
"Well, yes," she responded irritably. "Why haven't you had Parks cut your hair? It's far too long."
Well, it's going to stay this way," he replied casually and did not elaborate. "Anything going on?"
He appeared so unconcerned about this, Beatrice was tempted to snap that the company had gone bankrupt in the past week when the stock market crashed, since she also suspected he had not even been keeping up with the financial world. Along with her irritation, she started to feel a bit worried.
"Well, several things, of course. I've put a list on your desk, and they're in prioritized importance. Are you quite well?"
"Sure. The holidays were excellent," he said with a satisfied expression, and ambled into his office, completely forgetting to slam the door.
She heard him pace around a bit, sit down, get up, and then sit down in an armchair without even turning the computer on. Beatrice looked at the door with its 3-inch aperture with alarm. The door was always closed. The door had been closed for 20 years. The door was meant to be closed. She turned resolutely towards her computer, but kept staring back at the door. Should she close it herself? No, that would be out of line. Should she ignore it? That was entirely impossible. Beatrice bent beneath her desk and took a small bottle of aspirin from her purse. She felt a migraine coming on.
"Solange," Quinton demanded into his phone and glanced at the clock. He'd been at work approximately 15 minutes before calling her.
"Good show," he told himself wryly, while she was the one that said he better call her all the time.
"Darling!"
Solange sounded so thrilled, he was reassured.
"I miss you dreadfully."
"I miss you too. What are you doing?"
"Oh, just getting dressed,"
she replied sweetly.
"I thought I'd go to the bookstore."
"What are you wearing?"
Solange giggled at this.
"My black silk thong,"
she replied coyly.
"And my jeans and..."
"Oh, for God's sake, come by here before you go out. I don't know what the fuck's wrong with me."
"I'll be there as soon as I brush my hair," she said anxiously. "What's the matter?"
"I've no idea. Just hurry up."
"Oh, I will. I love you,"
she cooed.
"And I love you."
He snapped the phone shut and tossed it across to the couch.
Beatrice, who had overheard bits and pieces of this conversation, but more importantly, his tone of voice, was utterly horrified. Apparently, he'd taken up with some new woman. Well, that was bothersome enough. But why did he sound like some love-struck adolescent, especially when there was so much work to be done? Solange burst through the door, exuding sensuality in a tight green sweater, jeans, and black leather boots, and hurried past her. When she entered the office door, she glanced over her shoulder at B with a triumphant sort of smirk and closed it. Quentin, who had been pacing around the room, stopped walking when Solange rushed into his arms and held her very tightly, inhaling her light perfume. Everything seemed perfectly fine now.
"Whatever is bothering you, darling? You seemed all right this morning,"
Solange said worriedly, and Quentin began to feel extremely foolish.
"I'm fine. I suppose I just missed you,"
he muttered grudgingly. Solange beamed at him.
"Sweetheart!"
Solange. Now that she was here, looking like this and wearing that particular expression, he decided he was going to have his way with her if he had to beg. He swept everything off the desk, including the carefully prepared list, onto the floor, and pulled her towards him while Solange giggled delightedly. Beatrice buzzed the intercom. "Don't call me right now," he shouted into it, although she could have heard him perfectly well outside the closed door.
"Well,"
Beatrice nearly shrieked, this was simply turning into one of the worst days ever.
"I don't believe you told me to hold your calls. It's Dr. von Schlesenberg from the Pine Ridge Treatment Center."
This was the psychiatric hospital where Loretta was currently residing.
"For God's sake, tell him I'm in a meeting!"
"Quentin, maybe you better talk to him. Something might have happened to her,"
Beatrice heard Solange say breathlessly, and she glared at the closed door. She is a shameless slut, she thought irately. It's so obvious she's only taking advantage of him. Men are so stupid.
"Fine, put him through," Quentin yelled.
"The sooner I talk to him, the sooner I can hang up," he reasoned.
"Mr. Aquila!"
shrilled the pompous voice, and Quentin made a horrible face. Loretta's psychiatrist was the most highly respected in England, something which did not, however, keep him from being incredibly annoying. For some ungodly reason, Quentin thought, he seemed to think it his business to intrude upon his privacy, and it even suggested he and Loretta and Jamie engage in some sort of family therapy, where they were apparently meant to discuss their feelings for one another. Quentin would have cheerfully shot himself in the head before doing this. His only wish was that Loretta remain gone as long as humanly possible.
"A setback in the therapy?"
he asked hopefully, since he always got right to the point.
"No, no, she's doing quite well,"
the doctor intoned smugly, obviously considering himself the cause of this progress.
"But she's ahead of schedule. 6 more weeks, I believe. Discharge around Valentine's Day."
That is fucking marvelous, Quentin thought to himself.
"Fine," he barked out. "Is that all?"
Well, no. An important part of her therapy is getting in touch with her inner anger,"
the doctor replied in an exclamatory fashion.
"I thought she did that when she stabbed my valet,"
Quentin replied disgustedly, and Solange giggled.
"Well,
the physician was obviously not amused.
"Not the same thing, sir. A psychotic break, you know. We are working towards learning non-violent methods of expressing anger. Verbal messages. Activities that release her emotions. Therapeutic massage. Journaling. Individual counseling."
"What the fuck has this got to do with me?" Quentin shouted.
Dr. von Schlesenberg did not reply for a moment, since he was reminding himself to stay calm. He found Quentin most disagreeable and thought it no wonder the poor woman had suffered a nervous breakdown.
"We need some photographs of you."
"Of me? Whatever for?"
"Why, so she can shred them up."
Quentin resisted the urge to slam down the phone.
"Why in the hell didn't you just ask my secretary?"
"Patient confidentiality, sir,"
the doctor responded, aghast.
"We only have permission to speak to you or her son."
"I don't give a fuck if you talk to my secretary."
"She is the one who tells us who we may talk to."
"Fucking patient rights," Quentin thought furiously.
"Excellent. How many photographs does she need? Shall I have one blown up to poster size? Perhaps you'd have her make a bloody effigy of me and burn it to the stake, or hang it. The other loonies can make the ropest motherfucking arts and crafts project."
"No humor in this, sir," the doctor screeched, his patience apparently gone. "This is an inappropriate coping mechanism. You're in desperate need of therapy yourself."
"I am not your patient, and I do not want your damned advice. I'll send you the photographs, and don't dare bother me further, unless it's a fucking emergency!"
Quentin bellowed and slammed down the phone. And then, unsatisfied with this, he snatched it back up and hurled it through the window.
Bzzz. Bzzz.
Beatrice was back on a second intercom.
Honestly, Mr. Quiller, I've had it with calling the glass company. Can you ever behave yourself?
No. Apparently, I'm in desperate need of therapy.
Well, that's no surprise to me.
Don't be buzzing me, and don't be putting any calls through, he shouted and banged the phone down. Solange was giggling furiously by now.
I don't know, you get anyone to work for you, she chortled.
I'm not usually that bad, Quentin replied irritably. I really don't want to be here.
Well, we can't stay in bed all the time.
Why not? He started kissing her and worked his way down, and Solange, who never worried about such things, began moaning loudly. Quentin briefly imagined how appalled Beatrice must be at these sounds, but decided he really didn't care.
You better fuck me right here, she demanded.
Well, that was the plan, he grinned at her. A couple of hours later, Solange sashayed out the door with her hair askew and a triumphant look on her face. She'd always thought Beatrice was infatuated with Quentin, and Solange was quite a jealous person. Beatrice did not speak to her. Bea! Quentin called out cheerfully from the doorway. He, like Solange, looked rather disheveled, and she thought he had an extremely stupid look on his face. What? She snapped in an uncharacteristically impertinent fashion. Well, I was needing that list again. Can't seem to find it.
It was lying right there by your computer.
Sorry, he replied unrepentantly. I'd appreciate it. Beatrice found the show of affability possibly the most annoying thing he had done all morning. 15 minutes later, Rosie stomped into the room, and Beatrice started thinking of going home sick, something she had not done once in 19 years.
What are you scowling about, Bea?
Rosie said impertinently. Beatrice sniffed very haughtily. She thought Rosie much too young to be calling her this.
None of your concern, Miss Rosie. Your father isn't getting much work done today. He keeps being bothered.
Rosie just yawned.
Why ever not?
She asked curiously.
Who's bothering him?
Well,
you can just ask him yourself.
Rosie gave her a haughty look and strolled through the doorway, where she discovered Quentin leaning back in his chair, perusing the ceiling and smiling.
Are you having a nap? Is that why you're not getting anything done?
He frowned at this. No, not sleeping. Who said I wasn't getting anything done?
Beatrice,
Rosie wrinkled up her nose.
She's so rude, Dad. I don't know why you let her get away with it.
She knows this business as well as I do, Quentin barked out. There's no one that could possibly take her place. She's in a bad mood today for some reason. Then your mother came by, and you know she doesn't approve of that.
Oh, for heaven's sake,
Rosie looked disgusted.
Can't you two be apart for 10 minutes?
Apparently not. What's on your mind? Rosie sighed dramatically and flung herself down in the leather armchair.
I'm trying to figure something out, and I thought you might help me.
She went off on a tirade about her many issues concerning William, and Quentin gave her an impatient look and summed up her 20-minute speech in 60 seconds.
All right. First issue, he's worried you'll always be fighting, and this bothers him. Second issue is the secret about Elizabeth.
Well,
Rosie wailed,
what am I to do?
Find out the secret. Then be very understanding, no shouting, which will solve the first problem as well. You've got to show him you can resolve a dilemma without some altercation that he apparently can't endure. Quentin scowled at this.
There's nothing wrong with him, Rosie responded angrily. Most people don't like fighting and shouting.
Well, he's a girl. Suppose he can't help it. His uncle's the same way. We sit and argue, and the moment I start shouting, he says, please lower your voice. Then when I don't, it's, if you don't stop shouting, I'm leaving. I've got other friends, you know.
You don't like anyone standing up to you,
Rosie told him sweetly.
It isn't that, Quentin barked back. What does he have to do it in this considerate voice? I'd rather he just try to hit me.
Well, he wasn't brought up that way, I suppose,
Rosie shrugged, as if trying to excuse such behavior.
William says Remus was always telling him how he ought to behave when he was a kid. I bet he told him something stupid like, a person can stand up for themselves without shouting or being rude.
Rosie and her father exchanged disgusted looks.
So how am I going to find out the secret?
She demanded.
William won't tell me, and neither will Elizabeth. I know it's got to do with Lupin, and I'll bet he'd just tell me to mind my own business.
Politely,
Quentin added dryly, and Rosie giggled.
Can't you get it out of him?
I've already tried. That fucker can talk around the subject like you wouldn't believe. Then I got pissed and said something nasty about Elizabeth.
Her father looked thoughtful.
And he wasn't so polite, and left, which makes no sense at all. If he isn't angry with her, why would William be?
Oh, Rosie shrieked. This is impossible. Nobody's going to tell me.
Then you'll have to see for yourself, won't you?
Quentin replied with a wicked sort of smirk.
Don't you have your own foolproof method of discovering secrets?
Damn, Rosie thought irritably. I was puzzled about how you could remember something that happened on your actual birthday. He glared at her. And if there's one thing the bloody werewolf can do, it's figure something up. He's a spy, you know. He yawned. He says you would have borrowed William's time-turner. Rosie, who had been on the verge of protesting she hadn't done anything, gave it up after this last statement.
Well, how would I know whatever happened or where?
Quentin studied on this for a moment. If it has to do with William, Elizabeth, and Remus, it must have occurred at Fanshawe Manor. That's the only place the three of them would have been together. Apparently he used to come by for a weekend now and then with William, but I only met him once when I was dating Loretta. He grimaced. And after we married, he never came back. Victor said they'd had some trouble and I didn't want to talk about it. He shrugged. Can't say I ever gave it another thought.
When did you and Loretta get married?
August 13th, 1988. Quentin replied in a sepulchral tone. We were gone for a fortnight.
I can't go back for 14 days.
Just drop in every day at dinner time and see if the two of them show up. Then hang about until you see what happens. And let me know, will you? Rosie jumped up, smiling. She always liked having a plan.
Thanks,
she said happily and started for the door. Wait a minute, Quentin added and started searching through his desk drawers. I'd forgotten this. The morning after we returned, Richard and I went hunting, and when we were checking our rifles, he found a silver bullet in his. Rosie shivered.
But Dad, that's for...
I know that. But Richard was genuinely baffled. He didn't have a clue how it had gotten there. And he didn't mention any row. Quentin brought out an envelope with a lumpy shape and handed it to her. I had never seen a silver bullet, so I kept it and showed it to Brian once. He took it down to his lab and said it was a different kind of silver that, well, doesn't actually exist. This is getting better and better, Rosie thought delightedly.
What would I ever do without you, Dad?
She said sweetly. Trying to get something out of me, Quentin responded affably.
No,
she responded saucily.
Although I have been wanting a pink Lamborghini.
And you can't afford this, he said with some amusement. Rosie's cheeks turned pink, and she looked at the carpet.
Well, I'll talk to you about that later.
Quentin was rather puzzled by this, but reminded himself that she was a private person, like himself, and an adult. Whatever you want. I know a bit about finance, he finished wryly.
And just where are you going?
Beatrice demanded when Quentin strode out the door, and Quentin frowned at her, recalling Rosie's comment about his inability to handle his own secretary. I'm leaving, he replied nastily, if it's quite all right with you.
Well, it certainly isn't up to me,
she replied sulkily, but couldn't resist adding.
It's just that it's only 2 o'clock.
It's 2:30, Quentin hissed. Beatrice stood up angrily, her head throbbing.
It's 2:20!
She snapped obdurately. I'm not arguing with my own damn secretary about the motherfucking time. Go on early yourself.
Fine. Maybe I'll go on forever.
Beatrice screeched and began throwing her belongings into a pile. Although Beatrice threatened to quit at least once a month, she was never this unprofessional in her manner. And Quentin wondered briefly if something was wrong in her personal life, since she'd definitely never tell him. Her damn mother probably died last night, he thought sourly, and she figured she ought to come in anyway. To get yourself all wound up, Bea, he said sternly. What are you so pissed off about today, anyhow? Beatrice appeared slightly mollified by this.
Well, it's just... You're acting very strangely. I mean, how many items on the list have you completed?
Quentin gave her a sheepish look. Well, none. Well, I suppose I'll...
Nothing? Nothing? Do you have no discipline at all?
She said in an exasperated tone.
No, I don't mean any disrespect, Mr. Quiller. It's your company I'm concerned about. Wait, I've dedicated my whole...
Oh, God, not this speech again, Quentin thought wearily. But she's right. What kind of lazy fucker leaves at 2 without doing a damn thing? He stormed out the door without a backward glance. The day went downhill from there. Quentin found his stallion in an unkempt state, since 2 of the stable boys had quit, and the 3rd was in the back of the barn throwing up and moaning about a stomach virus. He didn't mind brushing out Aragog himself, but it bothered him to think he hadn't been properly cared for. He pondered inviting Lupin over, but he and Teddy were due to move in on the 15th, and he'd made some vague mention of having some business to take care of before then. What that meant, Quentin decided he did not wish to know. 10 minutes into his ride, it began sleeting and he had to turn back. And 3 seconds after sitting down in his library to be alone, Richard arrived and reminded him they had a date for chess. He was so aggravated and distracted, Richard actually won. And then Solange called to tell him she might be home a bit late since she found an old bookstore with lots of obscure French poetry she wanted to translate.
I guess I'll see you at dinner, he replied grumpily.
Darling, are you lonesome?
She responded in a pitying voice, and Quentin remembered his earlier pathetic behavior.
No, I'm bloody well not. I can survive by myself, you know. Take all the time you want.
I was planning on it,
she shrieked and hung up. In retrospect, Rosie thought, she should have known when she arrived at dinner and her mother's seat was empty, things were not going to turn out well. The quadruplets were whining terribly. Henry was shouting at Kenny, who was shrieking back at him, and Timothy was standing up in his chair loudly proclaiming that he was the greatest spy that had ever lived.
Sit down and shut up! Quentin shouted at him. Can't you even behave at the dinner table?
Timothy sat down in a sulk and poked his tongue out at Quentin when his back was turned. And shortly thereafter, the elder Fanshawes swished in with their superior air, Richard loudly boasting about how badly he'd beaten Quentin at chess.
There is no need to glare at him in that manner, Caroline sniffed irritably. Perhaps you are a poor loser, Quentin.
Elizabeth appeared at the table, frowned when she saw her sister's empty seat, and folded her arms across her bosom.
What have you done to her? She demanded. Can't you even let her be happy for more than 2 weeks? Don't listen to her, Dad,
Rosie whispered quickly and put a hand on his arm.
I fucking hate you, man!
Kenny screamed from the end of the table at his brother, who promptly punched him in the face.
Stop all that whining!
Shala yelled at the quadruplets, which turned the whining into bawling. Quentin said nothing, and Rosie and Jamie exchanged looks of foreboding. Victor and Carmine staggered into the room with their arms around one another, and Carmine burst into a loud, drunken, off-key song, with a voice that Rosie decided sounded like Bob Dylan on acid.
Oh my God! Is that supposed to be Loch Lomond?
Quentin bellowed.
What if it is, man? Carmine snarled defiantly. I guess I can sing what I want, asshole!
You're ruining it, you motherfucking idiot! Quentin thundered ominously. Don't even try to sing it.
What the fuck do you care?
Carmine had apparently ingested some sort of substance, which inspired boldness of a very dangerous variety.
He's a bloody islander, Victor hissed warningly. He hates anyone singing him old Scottish songs, unless they got an accent and have some bloody good voice and all.
Carmine ignored this advice completely.
You take the high road, and I'll take the low road,
he screeched in an ear-splitting falsetto voice.
And I'll be in Scotland for you. Look what I found in the tool shed, a chainsaw,
Timothy hollered out happily and began waving it back and forth.
Sit down, Jamie demanded and yanked him into his seat. What the fuck is wrong with you?
The chainsaw flew out of his hands and landed on the floor, and Quentin and Carmine both leapt to their feet.
Dad, you promised Mom you wouldn't hit anybody for a week,
Rosie whispered warningly.
Am you my true love? We'll never meet again.
I'll hit him for you, Dad, Jimmy put in helpfully.
He's hurting my ears, Uncle Quentin,
Natalie shrieked.
Make him stop that awful noise. Yeah, you're hurting our ears, Dad,
Nicholas yelled.
Why, I cannot even enjoy my dinner with this tomfoolery going on,
Richard boomed out.
On the bunny banks of a gloaming,
Carmine finished triumphantly.
I guess he showed you, dude,
Kenny informed Quentin with a satisfied smirk, and several people at the table hid their faces in their hands. Quentin and Carmine lunged at one another, and everyone screeched simultaneously and leapt back from their plates. The two rolled across the table, scattering dishes, food, and glassware in every direction, and toppled off onto the floor. When they struggled back to their feet, Quentin gave Carmine a great shove, and he staggered backwards, tripped, and landed right on top of the chainsaw. The blade sliced neatly through his neck, and there was a short-lived but dramatic spurting of blood, and Carmine lay decapitated on the floor.
Awesome! It's a shearing decapitation! I saw it on...
Timothy yelled happily. Shut up! Everyone screamed. They were all quite pale, especially Quentin.
Shala, get the kids out of here now! Jamie shouted,
and Shala, who needed no further encouragement, snatched up two under each arm and fled.
I say, why, I can't even eat it all now! Richard bellowed furiously. And we'll have the law on us again! It has been 6 months since someone else was murdered at the dinner table!
He turned and glared horribly at Victor, who gave him an offended look.
Scrub your ass, lag, he slurred.
He's talking about when you drowned Alfred in his pea soup, Henry said disgustedly. Your old fucking brain's pickled.
Almost certainly did not,
Victor replied loftily. The large black cook with the chef's hat came hurrying out the door and promptly dropped an enormous platter of sausages.
Good Lord, she wailed. Oh, Lord, help me. Jesus, that person with no head laying on this floor. Oh, Lord, there's his head. Oh, this is the worst thing that ever did in this place,
she wailed and covered her eyes with her apron.
And I've seen a lot here.
It was an accident, Jamie told her loudly. Get back in the kitchen and don't say anything to anyone.
You ain't got to tell me twice.
Lucretia muttered irritably and waddled out of the room.
He never wore no more white dress my whole life. I can't even believe,
she grumbled as she disappeared behind the swinging doors. One of the serving girls sailed right past her with a large bowl of steaming potatoes and promptly tripped over the body on the floor. She let out an unearthly scream and fainted, and Carmine's head rolled beneath the table with several satisfying thuds.
Ah! There's head under the table!
The entire crowd, except for Rosie and Jamie, ran from the room in a great galloping herd.
Look, Dad, you didn't mean it, you know?
Jamie said worriedly as he knelt in front of Quentin, who appeared stunned.
You didn't know that chainsaw was there. Timothy brought it in, this stupid little brat.
Sure, Quentin replied mechanically.
Look, I'll ring up Brian, Jamie said desperately. He'll come out and do a report. This time it really was an accident. We wouldn't have lied or anything.
Right. Thank you,
Quentin said in a zombified tone. Jamie gave his sister a desperate look.
Come sit by the fire, Dad,
Rosie blurted out, thinking she would like to remove herself from proximity to the headless body that lay stretched out 15 feet from her chair.
Yeah, come on, Rosie, go and get him some scotch.
Rosie returned with a glass of scotch and a bottle of brandy, and after she, Jamie, and Quentin gulped down two drinks in quick succession, Jamie flung the tablecloth over Carmine's body.
What about the head?
Rosie wailed.
Not getting it, Jamie replied in a panicked voice. You go get it.
Ew, I'm not touching that head.
Despite the two drinks, Quentin still looked quite miserable and began muttering something about the bloody werewolf who never showed up when he was actually needed. Jamie and Rosie, whose nerves were understandably quite frayed, nearly jumped through the roof when there was a loud crack and Lupin appeared on the couch beside them.
Sorry, he said in a puzzled voice. Jumpy, aren't you two?
We aren't used to people just showing up out of nowhere,
Rosie screamed, and Lupin sighed.
There's nothing odd about that,
he said in a reasonable voice.
It's just Dad and Carmine were fighting, and Carmine fell on the chainsaw, and then that girl that the potatoes, she tripped over the body. Yeah, we're gonna call Brian, but Dad's really upset, and you know, nobody wants to get the head,
Jamie blurted out frantically. Lupin glanced towards the table.
Oh, I see, he replied politely. Shearing decapitation. Nasty business,
he added consolingly. Timothy's head popped up from behind the couch.
I told you,
he shrieked triumphantly.
I told you that's what it was.
Lupin raised an eyebrow at this, but did not appear surprised to see Timothy.
And what do you know about shearing decapitation?
He asked him sternly.
I learned about it on Bad Ways to Die, Timothy hissed delightedly. It's this totally aged program on the telly, yeah? You learn about all the ways people die and what happens to them when they do.
Jamie and Rosie, who knew Lupin had been a professor, waited for him to start lecturing Timothy on why he shouldn't be watching such an inappropriate show.
It's on that television, you said?
Lupin asked Timothy in an interested voice.
How do you get the program up on the screen?
It's on Wednesday nights at 10, Tim replied happily. We can watch it together.
Well,
Lupin had the grace to look embarrassed.
We'll talk about it later. Look, I've some chocolate and butterbeer,
he told Quentin firmly, and two platters of chocolate and several mugs of butterbeer appeared on the table in front of them.
Is something wrong?
He frowned as he perused Quentin's ashen countenance. Jamie and Rosie, who were diving greedily into the chocolate, gave him incredulous looks.
Is something wrong?
Rosie screeched incredulously.
Well, he seems awfully upset,
Lupin replied in a baffled voice.
We are talking about Quentin here, although I don't suppose you've ever killed anyone,
he mused, as if this were rather odd,
or seen anyone die in a gruesome fashion.
It's not that,
Quentin blurted out and took some chocolate.
It's just his children right there at the table. They saw it all. They'll never forget it.
Not a problem, Lupin replied kindly. I'll obliviate their memories, and I'll see to the head,
he told Jamie reassuringly, and ambled out of the room.
That is one weird motherfucker,
Jamie said fervently when Lupin disappeared from view.
He could still hear you,
Quentin replied dispassionately, and Jamie looked rather alarmed. Timothy trotted over and helped himself to some chocolate.
You need to treat magical beasts and beings,
he told his brother knowingly.
When Lupin returned 20 minutes later, Quentin and the twins had each drunk 4 butter beers, eaten a platter and a half of chocolate, and now apparently found the whole incident a scream. And then his fucking head rolled onto the table, Jamie shouted, and they all toppled over laughing.
Do you think when he died, Rosie gasped out, he took the high road or the low road?
Tears began streaming down their faces. Lupin looked at the empty platter, the 3 in front of him, and started smiling.
You weren't meant to eat the whole platter. I should have told you.
This apparently was also quite funny. Lupin sat down and took a mug for himself, just as Parks strolled into the room with his disapproving demeanor.
Parks! Quentin shouted out happily, and Parks screeched to a halt. Sit down and have a drink with us!
Jamie and Rosie screeched out their assent, and Lupin gave Parks a sympathetic look.
It's my fault, he said kindly. They've had a bit too much chocolate and butter beer.
What in the world have you all been doing? Parks bellowed and turned on Lupin. And don't tell me it's in the beer. This is not how he acts when he's drunk.
Then it's the chocolate, Lupin replied calmly. There's no need to glare at me. I was only trying to help.
Chocolate?
Parks said disgustedly and gave Lupin a nasty look.
I highly doubt that. And why are you dressed in this fashion?
Costume party,
he responded promptly, as if he'd had to answer this question 1,000 times.
I'm sure it looks quite odd to you,
he added politely. Rosie thought she heard him mutter, you old muggle motherfucker, under his breath, but decided she must have been mistaken.
Have a piece.
Lupin gave Parks a very steady look.
I'm not eating any of that tainted chocolate. Lord only knows what's in it, and perhaps I'll have a piece or two.
He sat down and snatched up the chocolate with a friendly expression, and a few moments later he was smiling.
Well, tell me what happened now,
he asked Quentin sympathetically and patted him on the knee. Quentin put on a pathetic face, which Lupin and his children knew was quite for show.
Well, come on. You know that drugged-up fucker that used to be with Sammy?
Park sniffed his assent.
When he was singing Loch Lomond, and when he can't sing, his accent's horrible. So I sort of killed him.
Jamie and Rosie hung on each other's shoulders and screeched with laughter.
You sort of killed him. My word. It's quite sad. You children don't realize. To think his parents employed me to teach him how to behave. Sing it, Rosie,
her father told her emphatically.
I can't do a Scotch accent, Dad.
Sure you can, he answered promptly. Jamie's got it down perfectly.
Rosie glared horribly at her brother, since she had imagined there was nothing he was better at than she was.
I think if you sing it, Lupin told her decisively, your accent will sound just as it should.
Rosie gave him a suspicious look.
Go on, he said cheerfully. I lived half of life in Scotland myself, you know.
Rosie couldn't imagine what this had to do with her singing, but began anyway, and was astonished when she did indeed sound like a native Scotswoman, and all the others joined in. Richard, Lady Fanshawe, and Elizabeth came back into the room. Richard, because he was concerned about whatever mental anguish Quentin might be suffering, and Elizabeth and Caroline, because they wanted to enjoy whatever mental anguish Quentin might be suffering. All 3 stood open-mouthed at the loudly singing revelers.
He's gone and gotten drunk! Right after he killed someone, Elizabeth yelled. And Solange wonders why I think he's a great, nasty beast.
Lupin immediately stopped singing.
Well, it's the chocolate and butterbeer,
he stammered out, and Elizabeth gave him an irritated look.
I was trying to cheer him up.
Seems you've cheered yourself up as well,
Elizabeth replied snappishly.
I don't suppose it matters to any of you that there are 4 children that saw their father murdered in front of their eyes.
Lupin jumped up and started pacing around the room, but Quentin merely beamed at Elizabeth as if she were just the person he most wanted to see.
Elizabeth! He shouted cheerily. Come and have a drink with us!
No, thank you!
Elizabeth hissed and fled the room.
I say, old boy! Richard bellowed. I know you've had a bit of a shock, but drinking like this with the children!
Grandpa! We're 21 years old! Jamie shouted back. We're having fun! Rosie declared merrily. Jamie, do you remember when we used to have fun together? When we were little?
He gave her a perplexed look.
We did!
She giggled and actually put her hand on his arm.
I remember it! We used to roll up in that old hammock at the manor house, remember? And we made all those imaginary people and that evil knight gargoyle and throw pillows in the closet because we thought he was in there and the dragons!
I do remember, Jamie shouted enthusiastically.
And we put eggs on Grandpa's chair in the morning. And bogeys in Grandmother's hairbrush!
Rosie screeched and they both shrieked with laughter.
The front door suddenly opened, and Solange hurried in, looking quite harried indeed.
"I've been trying to call you," she hollered at Quentin. "My car broke down, and I couldn't find anyone to come get me."
Quentin, Parks, and the twins all broke out laughing.
"That is not funny. What is wrong with you all? Are you having some sort of party?"
"It's a deadhead party," Jamie yelled, and he and Rosie both fell off the couch laughing.
"What? Are you all drunk?"
Solange shouted as she stomped towards the group, and Quentin looked at her with a beatific smile.
No, we had a rather bad time at dinner, and then Remus showed up and helped us out. Didn't you, Remus? We're feeling much better.
Come sit on my lap." She did so, but kept giving them all puzzled glances.
What happened at dinner?
Carmine was singing Loch Lomond. He wouldn't stop, Rosie yelled, and Solange winced.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Quentin, you promised me you wouldn't hit anyone for a week, and it's only been 3 days.
I didn't hit him, Quentin said self-righteously. Not once. I just sort of shoved him.
They've had a bit too much chocolate, Lupin explained hastily. There was a rather traumatic incident at dinner.
Traumatic? What happened? Where's Timothy?
Solange jumped up and screamed.
He's fine, honey, he's fine.
Quentin pulled her back on his lap.
What the hell happened? Tell me, Lupin.
Lupin told her. Solange turned quite pale, glanced in horror towards the table, and then glared at Quentin and the twins, all of whom found the retelling of the story hysterically funny.
There is nothing funny about this.
You told me not to hit anyone, and I didn't.
No, you just killed him.
You didn't tell me not to do that.
Rosie and Jamie laughed delightedly, and Parks chuckled loudly.
You are all quite, quite fucked up,
Solange screeched and stomped her foot. More shrieks of laughter followed this pronouncement.
I'm going to bed in my room.
Even this didn't seem to bother Quentin, since he just called after her,
"Watch out you don't trip over the head,"
as she stomped out. Rosie got up and meandered toward the elevator, singing cheerfully along the way.
There's an ending o' the dance, and fair Mareg safe in front, and the clan they have paid the looing, and the woody has a rain, and we twere left alone, free o' Carlisle gal in the drawing, by yon bonny, bonny banks, and by yon bonny, bonny breeze, where the sun shines bright on Loch Lomond, where me and me true love were e'er one to go, on the bonny, bonny banks of Loch Lomond. Oh, ye'll take the high road, and I'll take the low road, and I'll be in Scotland afore ye. For me and me true love will ne'er meet again, on the bonny, bonny banks of Loch Lomond. Oh, man.